Reporting on politics and public policy is supported by the Center for Western Studies at Augustana University.
Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Representative Dusty Johnson votes with House Democrats to block the president's emergency declaration. South Dakota's U.S. senators vote on an abortion survivors bill this week, and the latest from the 2019 legislative session. It's time to welcome the Dakota Political Junkies. In Aberdeen, John Schaff is with us. He's professor of political science and department chair at Northern State University, and he's joining us from the Tom and Danielle Amen Foundation studio. Hi, John.
Hi, good to be here.
And in Watertown on the phone, we have Roger Whittle. He is managing editor of the Watertown Public Opinion. Welcome back, Roger.
Thank you, and I'm honored to be here with John.
Oh, okay. Well, and?
I will take that honor and run with it.
That's lovely. All right, let's start with Congressman Dusty Johnson. And he voted to block President Donald Trump's declaration of a national emergency along the southern border. And this goes back to building a wall or barriers, border security, the humanitarian crisis. A lot's happening in this conversation. And he's one of 13 Republicans to join all the Democrats backing the measure. Roger, let's start with you. The significance and possible impact of Dusty Johnson's vote.
Yeah, it was a big deal. You characterized it as voting with the Democrats, but I think he would say that he was voting his own conscience. He just doesn't believe that the president should be using executive orders to do this kind of thing. And in his statement that he put out, he likened it to a Democratic president using those executive powers to, say, enact strict gun control or pass Medicare for all. So I think he believes he's standing up for what is right. And from the reaction I've seen on social media right now, the Republicans in South Dakota are not happy about it.
Hmm. Would you expect anything different, Roger, from Dusty Johnson than voting his conscience on this?
I expected him to vote the way he did, because when he was running, all the candidates were in through here and speaking to us, and he was really the only one who did not align himself directly with the President Trump. He touted his own experience, his own ideas, and he never did what the other candidates did and say they're wholeheartedly put behind the president. So it didn't surprise me in the least.
John, let's get into this idea of executive authority and what Dusty Johnson said in his statement. He particularly mentioned President Obama and the use of executive authority during his 8 years in office. Parse that out for us a little bit, please.
Well, I think the argument that people like Dusty Johnson are making, those who are making a principled argument, of course, a lot of people are making political arguments, but the principled argument is that if it was wrong, as many Republicans said, for Barack Obama to rewrite, which he did, almost literally did, he rewrote the Affordable Care Act for his own political convenience without going to Congress. If he could, in essence, rewrite immigration law with the Dreamers and DACA, if that was a usurpation of legislative power to the executive, then how is this different? Especially when President Trump himself said in his announcement that he was going to do this emergency declaration, he said, "I don't have to do it." Well, I'm just a simple country boy, but when someone says, "I don't have to do it," that strikes me as not really being an emergency. Emergencies are things that you have to do, to say nothing of the fact that if it's an emergency, why did we go through the whole government shutdown? If he was just going to do this anyway, politically it seems like an odd move by the president. But I think that's what as I read a lot of, I would say, conservative commentators are very much on Dusty Johnson's side, not necessarily Dusty's constituents, but the conservative commentators I read are on Dusty Johnson's side, precisely because on principle, if they objected under Barack Obama of the president taking on legislative powers. Listen, the legislature had an opportunity to vote on a wall, and they voted no during our shutdown. And so the legislature has spoken, and the president doesn't get extra power just because he doesn't like what the legislature is doing.
John, I want to go back to what you said about the Affordable Care Act and how that sort of came into being. And the rhetoric and the way that the Affordable Care Act was pushed forward is still impacting how we discuss it today, isn't it? From a, you know, from a campaign perspective to what it's called, there's consequence in sort of how things move through Washington, isn't there?
Well, so you can't separate process from politics. And so one of the things that, you know, I've said this before when we've been together, that what we want out of our leaders is we want some sort of conciliation, some sort of compromise. And part of the problem with the creation of the Affordable Care Act and then how President Obama implemented it is it was done in a partisan way. I don't mean that it was, you know, simply politics, but it was the Democrats on their own. Now, part of that is the Republicans' fault. They themselves weren't that interested in compromise, but it became clear at a certain point when President Obama said at a meeting with Republicans, the election's over, I won. And you know, he famously said that to John McCain's face at a meeting that they televised. And so it was his way of saying, listen, I won the election. I don't have to talk to you guys. I don't have to incorporate your ideas. And I think that has left a bitter taste in Republicans' mouths. I'm sure if we thought a little bit, it wouldn't be that hard to reverse the partisan analysis and go the other direction. But when things are even passed and implemented in a partisan way, then it becomes difficult for the country to buy into it because it seems simply like one side imposing on the other side.
Yeah. Do we want some sort of compromise, Roger? Or, you know, when you look at the constituents and the folks in South Dakota, and obviously you can't judge versus social media because not everyone is going to take to social media and express their approval or disapproval, even though many people are. But are we seeing folks wanting that compromise or are they just wanting victory?
It's been so long since we've seen compromise in our national politics. I'm not sure people would even recognize it if they saw it. From what I've seen, I don't think that the voters of South Dakota want compromise. I mean, they want what they want, and they're used to getting it.
So how do we look forward to the vote in the Senate now with Senator Thune and Senator Rounds? Roger, any, I don't want to say predictions, but any insight into sort of the significance of where they stand on the issue?
I don't want to give any predictions, but I would be surprised if they voted with the Democrats in this, just judging by history. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I'm still impressed with John's use of the term usurpation, and I really haven't heard anything that he said since then. So. It's nice having a college
professor. Sounds like I should be on the payroll.
John Schaaf, thoughts on that sense of, you know, when Senator Thune, the last time he was on this program, I asked him if the situation at the border was an emergency, and he said no, it was urgent, but he wouldn't classify it as a national emergency. But there are indications that he would stand with President Trump on this. What are your thoughts about what's sort of behind that and the political significance of it for folks like John Thune and Dusty Johnson?
Well, I think one thing, I'll make this prediction, not so much on how people are going to vote, but they are going to bring it up to a vote. And Mitch McConnell did not just fall off the turnip truck, and he doesn't bring things up to a vote if he doesn't know he's got the votes. Mm-hmm. And so I assume it's going to pass, which gives me an indication that probably Rounds and Thune are probably for it. And I think it puts, in some ways, you know, I have sympathy with people in the Rounds and Thune position because you don't want the president of your party to lose a vote. It just simply looks bad. And so there's a lot of pressure. And we see this, you know, all the time that, one party says one thing when their person's in power. Other party gets in power and suddenly they're doing the exact opposite. And in some ways, that's understandable. But this is in a lot of ways, I think it's a test. Is we've gotten all sorts of Republicans on the record over the last decade or so talking about how much they didn't like President Obama's aggressive use of the executive power. And now I guess they're going to have a chance to cast a vote on that and see how much of that was sincere and how much of it was simply in the moment. All right, if you will.
Yes. So let's talk about another national issue that probably many people don't want compromise on, and that is the abortion conversation. The Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act being debated in Washington, and strong words about sort of the moral implications of this, the political and legal implications of it. Roger, what's going on with this legislation and the dialogue around it?
Well, Senator Thune gave a very impassioned speech that I saw online about this issue, and it's interesting that they're just accusing the Democrats of having no heart at all in this. They were talking about babies they tried to do an abortion on, but the baby somehow survived and was born alive, and the Republicans want to require medical care for those infants to make sure they survive. And it seems to me to be common sense, and I don't really understand how the Democrats could be against that. And that's basically what he said in his speech. So it was a good moment for him.
John Schaff, the Democrats are saying it creates a punishment for doctors who are currently allowed to use their medical discretion, and it's an attack on reproductive rights for women. Do they have a point? Is this just it's a tough one to stand against?
Yeah, I think it's been the bill that Senator Sasse brought up, the resolution, has been mischaracterized, because in essence it has nothing to do with abortion, because you're talking about what happens after an abortion, because this does happen. Maybe it's hard for people to believe. When I was living in Chicago in the late 90s, there was a bit of a scandal there. There were a couple of hospitals where dozens of these things were happening, where babies were born in a late-term abortion. They're born alive and were left to die. And so the question is whether that child at that point has any legal protections. And at that point, do you leave it up to people's discretion, even a doctor's discretion, whether an infant outside the womb lives or dies? And I think what's going on here is, this is at least, obviously there's a lot of sincerity, but there's also something of a political game going on here, mm-hmm. is that the Democrats have staked out in various states like New York, they're doing this now in Vermont, in Virginia, in Rhode Island, this very extreme position on abortion, where they're taking positions that make sense within their own party, but are very unpopular nationwide amongst the general public, where the general public is extremely squeamish about late-term abortions, to say nothing about now you've got a baby outside the womb. The public doesn't really support this, but the internal politics of the Democratic Party, you can't really do anything that gives the slightest hint that you're compromising, as we were just talking about, with the pro-life side. And Republicans, knowing this, have and responding to certain legislation and statements of public officials, and like I say, in places like Virginia, New York, have put this piece of legislation in front of the Senate. And in a way, again, they probably knew it wasn't going to pass, but it's a way of putting people on record, especially all those, it's like five or six U.S. senators who are running for the Democratic nomination for president, and putting them on record. Something that is going to be probably a bit embarrassing in about a year and a half.
So let's jump back home to South Dakota, because I want to expand on a little bit of that theory with a different topic. And this is a House Bill 1270, which failed in the House. And it was about teachers teaching scientific skepticism. And it kind of takes on that party rhetoric a little bit of, what you would expect from conservatives, what you would expect from liberals. Roger, you want to lay this one out a little bit so we have groundwork?
I might not be the best person to do that, but from my limited knowledge of the bill, it's that they wanted to give teachers the right to not teach things like creationism and the Big Bang Theory and these as settled science, just as theories. And, I was really kind of surprised that it didn't pass in the legislature. I would assume that a lot of the South Dakota legislators would would be backing it, and a lot of them didn't.
Yeah. So, John, that gets to the question of a lot of, we maybe assume in a Republican-dominated legislature that something like that would pass, and then it doesn't. Is that an indication of sort of campaign rhetoric? Is that an indication of the conversation over local control? What's going on there?
Yeah, well, I think the local control has a lot to do with it, because then what you've got is an issue which kind of cuts across cleavages within the Republican Party, is you've got some people, mostly the more religiously conservative members, who are the ones who are, I think, were more in favor of this piece of legislation. And then you've got other people espousing another, you might say, legitimate conservative point of view, is why do we have to legislate what teachers are doing in the classroom or dictating to local school districts how they handle these issues? They can probably handle it themselves. And so I can't read the minds of the legislature, but my guess is that those Republicans that voted against this is probably what was on their minds as well. I don't know how necessary this is, if there are a bunch of high school science teachers who would like to question evolution or the Big Bang Theory, but somehow feel constrained. I'm going to guess that's probably a minimal number of people. But whether it's necessary or not, there are going to be some Republicans who simply say this isn't something that the state legislature has to deal with. Let the school superintendent or the high school principal deal with it.
Roger, it seems like there was more than one bill, and many of them have failed, many are still alive, that really deal with sort of getting inside the school building, getting inside the classroom. And teachers have been complaining about not being trusted, being sort of attacked by state lawmakers. Do you see that as a theme of this legislation or this legislature? Is that every state legislature where that topic is going to come up again and again?
Well, I'm sure somebody will bring it up over and over, like a lot of these guys do with their pet bills. I just think it was heartening to see them stick to their local control theories and not allow this bill to go through. And I think it was a Republican legislator even said, "What problem are we trying to solve here?" So sometimes common sense does prevail.
All right. And John, let's bounce that back to what we have spoken about before, about free speech on college campuses. Yeah. And some legislation that you were supportive of that kind of got at that same idea that was, hey, this isn't being done locally in a way, and it needs some, in a way that makes sense to some people, it needs some legislation. More to say on that?
Yeah, and I note that bill is in front of Senate State Affairs this morning, or was. But that was House Bill 1087. We'll see what happens with it. It passed the House. I think what's happening is I think there's a sense in Pierre that around the country there is, I don't know, for lack of a better term, this is a bit infelicitous, but an educational establishment that thinks differently than, say, your average South Dakotan. And so while you'd like to leave educational bureaucracies, educational institutions kind of to themselves, to educate themselves and defer to their professional judgment, when there are even outside forces like, you know, at universities, it's often accrediting agencies. In universities and K-12, it's often the federal government, the Federal Department of Education, who are encouraging certain notions, certain ideas that maybe most people here in South Dakota would be opposed to, then it's a matter of whether you can trust the institution or whether there has to be legislative action. And I think you're probably going to have to take this on a case-by-case basis, because as we're talking about with this particular bill about Big Bang Theory and all that stuff, I think the instinct of Pierre is to simply leave it alone. But every once in a while, certain things percolate up. We've seen this a little bit with some of the transgendered bills. There are things that percolate up that maybe you can't leave it alone, because at least that's the sense in Pierre, because you're worried that some sort of national phenomenon, even though national legislation or outside forces who have a lot of impact on education are going to force our hands, and the legislature wants to respond to that.
My guest, if you're just tuning in, Roger Whittle, he's the managing editor of the Watertown Public Opinion, and John Schaff, who is a professor of political science and department chair at Northern State University. This is our weekly Dakota Political Junkies segment, and Roger Whittle stopped listening after Infelicitous. Right? Am I wrong? All right, let's close out with
I just met Roger. The check is in the mail, by the way, so you should get that any day now. So,
Roger, news from Watertown area. Anything that's going on in your neck of the woods that's worth talking about today?
Well, we had a big train derailment up in Milbank, up in Grant County, earlier this week, where a 23 cars derailed going right through the middle of town, and for most of the morning, every railroad crossing in town was blocked, so that was pretty interesting. It started off with a collision with a trailer, so that was probably the big news there.
Any spills or damages or let's finish up with South Dakota lawmakers looking for more separation from the governor. And again, John Schaaf, this is an ongoing conversation that people say about sort of beefing up the influence of the state legislature over the governor. What are some of the efforts to do that?
Well, I think the main one that we're getting at here is, you know, the way it is in law right now. And we've seen this a lot in the last handful of years. When there is a legislator who leaves the legislature in the middle of their term, sometimes it's because they take a different job. We've had some legislators who have sadly passed away, and it's the governor's job to appoint someone to take that spot until a new election comes along. And there is some legislation move that from the governor to local political parties. So it'd be the central, if it's a Republican from a district, it'd be the Republican County Committee. If it's a Democrat, the Democrat County Committee, that those people would appoint the person to fill out the term until we can have an election. And so this is an attempt by the legislature to take a power away from the governor, in this case, not really give it to the legislature, but in the view of the people who are supporting this, it's putting it in the hands of people, you know, parties who are, in their view, I think, more in touch with the local communities and are going to select a legislator who more represents the will of the local community instead of the will of the governor, to the extent that those are different.
Roger Whittle, what's next for this conversation? Do you anticipate more in the future as sort of the citizen legislatures, seek a little more influence?
Well, I got to tell you, this one, when I read about this bill, it really struck me as, why does the governor get to pick the new legislature for a local area? We've talked in the past about this legislature and the governor kind of feeling each other out, see who's can take the upper hand, and I don't think this really fits into that, is just trying to strip the governor of some of her power. I think this is just a commonsensical issue that when there's a legislative opening, it should be the people of that district who decide who's going to represent them.
Roger Whittle is managing editor at the Watertown Public Opinion. Roger, thanks so much for being here today. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.
John Schaaf, professor of political science at Northern State University, joined us from the Tom and Danielle Ammon Foundation studio at NSU. John, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.